Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your host, TB Scouting MMA, and
the guru back again from the amazing, incredible Apex Arena. We've got UFC Vegas 88, Ty Bam Bam Tuivasa taking on Marcin Tybura in your heavyweight main event. But before we can get to this crazy card, we've got a very special guest in the building, a friend of ours, somebody that we've met up with in person, just as cool in real life as he is on the stream. He's making money, placing big money bets, right? Long shots. He hits them all. We got the Propaholic here in the building. Make sure you're following him on YouTube, MMA Propaholic. What's up, buddy? Good to see you.
What's up, crew? What's up, TB? How you guys doing? I'm excited for this card. I think we got a fun card going this weekend. I'm excited to see Tuivasa fight. And yeah, it should be a fun one. Can't wait to break down these fights with you guys.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. I can't wait for the analysis you bring to the table. Uh-oh, getting them daddies popping? Is that what's happening over there,
dude? The daddies be popping, you know?
Oh, snap. Celebrating that Sugar Sean O'Malley victory with the happy daddies, huh? Love that. Oh, yeah. And the Sugar Show shirt. Good job last week, Guru. Once again, this time you made it to honorable mentions. But listen, this guy's been killing it on the straight picks game week in, week out this year. I mean, all the time, but like, specifically, he's at the top of the leaderboard week by week.
What's right? Our head-to-head, bro? You got to get that up on the website.
I got to update it. I'll update on chroniccombat.com. That's something I'll look into doing here during the show. Pretty easy for me to update. I just keep on forgetting to do it. But before we can get into this card, Antoine, what's going on? Appreciate you, brother. Get something popping if you got it. You know what I mean. Daz, he appreciates all the best guests that we bring on. We don't mess around. That's why we got Propaholic for you guys. And then Antoine, yeah, hope you're having a wonderful evening too, man, and a great day. What a good guy. Love you always popping in the chat week by week. Listen, if you guys haven't done so already, please throw a like on the video. Helps us out so much promoting this content to other people. Always free. Hit the subscribe button. It doesn't cost you a thing. We have fun, amazing content. If you guys have joined us yesterday, we had the one and only Ayman Zahabi live on the show. Breaking down his previous gigantic underdog upset victory. And I think we gained a little bit of perspective in that conversation. So make sure you guys are checking out the Ayman Zahabi interview from yesterday. And make sure you're throwing a like here today. Subscribe to MMA Propaholic on YouTube. And, man, listen, it's the best guess, and always free picks. You know we bring the heat, and we love to have a good time. So I hope you guys are ready, because what could be better than Bam Bam Tuivasa versus Marcin Nochin Tybura? This is going to be like the epic heavyweight throwdown of all magnitudes. Well, realistically, if Tuivasa wins, it's going to be exciting. If Tybura wins, well, we saw 15 minutes or less of cage pushing and sloppy, you know, heavyweight top control and looking for submissions. Now, Tybura, I mean, this is a guy that's 1-1 going into round three against the one and only your boy, Blagoy Ivanov. And in this fight, if he's eating the strikes that he was eating against Blagoy, it's going to be serious trouble versus Bam Bam. So, personally, I'm going to tie Tuivasa's side here. I'm an idiot. I got in at minus 125. You guys can currently get in at minus 118. This is typically the opposite of the conversation we have on the channel. So hope you guys go ahead, get a better line than TV, because Tuivasa here, I mean, listen, I mean, you might as well just play the knockout prop, right? Like Tybura, all of his losses, I mean, I say no chin for a reason. Anytime this guy fights someone with like any respectable shred of power and willingness to finish the fight, like Walt Harris, man, like that was just sad. Like, you got to finish the job, brother. And Ty Tuivasa, the calf kicks, the huge power, even a little bit of improved scrambles and bottom game. I mean, listen, Derek Lewis goes to the takedowns, D1 Derek Lewis, but like Ty Tuivasa actually kind of scrambles up, eats a couple shots on his way up. Now, Volkov, that's a big dude. And even Tybura couldn't drag that guy down. So, personally, I think Tybura is just getting smoked on the way in. Guru, what do you got going on here?
Yeah, I think it was exactly that. If you guys are following me on Twitter, which hopefully you are, part of my scouting process is hopefully I'll put up a little and something that I noticed tape and see if it's useful. And TB mentioned it right away. It was Ty Tuivasa in round two after taking tons and tons of punishment due to the length of Volkov, which, by the way, he just continues to walk forward, walk through it, walk forward, walk through it, doesn't care, right? Marcin Tybura is not going to be able to handle that kind of pressure. Not only that, but if he wants to be in the clinch with Ty, that's going to cause problems, because what you see versus Tom Aspinall is something you've seen, honestly, five times in Marcin Tybura's career. He's just not that durable. He doesn't really have the heart. He takes one of those big shots, and he kind of quits. So I have been seeing a video circulating online in TBI. I think I sent it to you. I don't know if you've seen it. But it's tied to Tuivasa kind of freaking out and seems to be grabbing at his knee and in pain, and maybe tore his MCL just a few weeks ago. So maybe that's what's causing some hesitancy on this line.
Months. But, it was December.
Okay. Months. Just thank you. Just making
sure. MCL, it has a higher vascular source. Like the ACL doesn't get any blood flow. MCL, you know, you might have to check in with your doctor. It's been more than 4 hours. But basically, like, the MCL is going to regenerate and heal on its own, whereas, like, it doesn't require reconstructive surgery after a tear, depending on the severity. So, Listen, the guy hurt his knee. He rehabbed it. He's back in a hard cap.
He's only 30 years old. So, and say what you want about him being, you know, a bigger guy or whatever. The dude is athletic in an unbelievable shape. And let me ask anybody this who is on the Tybura side. Of his last three losses, being Volkov, Pavlovich, and Cyril Gaon, which one of those does Marcin Tybura come out with a W in? I know Styles makes matchups, but I mean, at a certain point, there's levels to this shit. And Taj has shown that his pressure is going to be a problem for Tybura, who just – I just don't see – everybody that's picking Tybura is saying, oh, okay, he's going to pull away rounds two, three. Like, what makes you think he's got the durability to get there? Ty just comes forward, like I said, with pretty reckless abandon. So I'm very interested to hear what Prop's got to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the same side as you guys. I'm on Tuivasa for 1.75 units at minus 125. I just don't really like Tybura's open mat wrestling, honestly. Like, even in the Wald-Harris fight, like, he got rocked extremely early off a left hook, and Harris just kind of blitzed him forward. He didn't throw any leg kicks. Like, Tuivasa, when he hurts someone, he's actually pretty technical and he goes for finishes. He just doesn't blow out all his energy and throw everything that he has to finish his opponent. I really like what he does with the lead leg also. He was landing pretty good kicks against Gaon. He rocked Gaon also in the second round really bad. And as we know, Gaon said he was knocked out, but he hit the cage and he actually ended up finishing Tuivasa. But I mean, my goodness, like, it took Gaon about, like, blasting 20 body kicks to finish Tuivasa, because Tuivasa just kept coming forward. And, like, the Pavlovich fight, I can't rule the Pavlovich fight into capping against Marcin Tybura. And it's like, even in the Volkov fight, like, he loses round one, but in round two, like, his face is battered. And I don't even think he was in the best shape for that fight as well. And he was just blasting Volkov's, like, leg with leg kicks. And if Tuivasa didn't slip on that kick, because Volkov didn't get a takedown at all, like, that could have been a different fight going into the third round as well. So I don't really think Tybura is really, like, that much of a cardio pusher as well. Like, I feel like he's pretty bad to eating shots. I feel like if he's even to go into the clinch with Tuivasa, I feel like Tuivasa could flip him over and also land elbows in the clinch. He's really good in tight, close boxing range also. And as you guys talked about in the Ivanov fight, like, Ivanov, yeah, like, he made Ivanov look as fast as Ivanov looked in a while. And Ivanov hurt him bad in the first minute of the fight and just didn't follow up with it. Like, I just don't think he even had the urgency, and I don't even think he knew he was hurt. And if you guys watch Tybura's tape, he's not taking any leg kicks at all in his last five fights. Like, the most leg kicks he took actually was against Romanov, and it was after the first round when Romanov was gassed in elevation using all his cardio. So I feel like people who are just saying Tuivasa's win conditions only in the first round, yeah, maybe that is because all his wins are in the first round, but it wouldn't shock me if he knocked him out in the third round due to leg kicks. And if you guys go watch his YouTube, he's in the best shape of his whole entire career right now. His coaches are saying that he's fighting through all the cardio drills the most he's ever been fighting through the drills. He's been just doing everything at his best, and I feel like he's 8 years younger. I think he has more motivation coming into this fight. I just, even the haircut of Tybura looks terrible. Like, I just think this line for Tuivasa is an absolute steal. Knowing he had moments in the Gon fight, then you can't even cap the Pavlovich fight into this. So,
right.
Yeah, I like Tuivasa here, man. I think he's going to fucking destroy Tybura. He's on
I think bringing up the Ivanov fight is so important because Marcin Tybura lands 40 strikes in a decision versus Blagoy Ivanov, where you're watching the fight and he is very content to let Ivanov control the basically the pace of the fight. He lets Ivanov control the center of the octagon. He's the one circling and walking from the outside. Those kind of tendencies are not going to work well versus Ty Tuivasa. And again, anybody thinking like it's just going to be as simple as, oh, like the Sergey Spivak fight, you're just going to grapple him and submit him. It's like Marcin Tybura doesn't really wrestle to that caliber or magnitude, really. He's more of a cage pusher. It's just what he likes to do. So, yeah, I really do like Ty Tuivasa here, and I do not understand this line at all. It's very weird.
And listen, last week we had Michelle versus Mikhail. This week we have Ty versus Tybura.
I was on prayer last week also. That was awesome.
It's the battle of the ties. So I think if we're lining up here with prop, how last week went, it's only right. I think we're getting Ty Tuivasa.
I'm so annoyed. I literally called the Michelle Pereira sub. Not only did I say sub, I said Olajecha cannot defend rear naked chokes, and I did not. I forgot to bet it.
Well, club and sub too. That would have been an awesome cash too.
Amazing. Yep.
This guy is one of the biggest hoes in the game. For a reason.
I am.
For a reason. It's okay though.
One of the dirtiest players in the game.
One of the most hottest hidden safeties in the league. Green Brian. Brian the Butcher battle versus, all right, am I allowed to say it?
Pooh Bear.
No.
Oh, you just
and, just
enunciate.
All right, so it's Angelosa, the last ninja, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right?
Well,
yes. Okay, I'm just making sure. All right, and yeah, Keyboard Warriors, I agree. Tybura did already lose via awful new haircut. It's like when your mom makes sure that you're ready for picture day, and then you go fuck it up in the bathroom at school that day. Like you're like, let me just fuck. I'm gonna have the kid in our class do my hair.
Did that happen to you? Is that like, are you having therapy right now? What's going on?
I'm trying to think of why the fuck Marcin's hair would look like that. But anyways, talk about the butcher. That's whoever Marcin's hairdresser was. But we have,
well, that was quick. That was good.
Dude, I'm just doing my best out here. Okay. It's the last ninja is what we have in this fight. It's like the last samurai. So Brian battle here, he's coming in. He's going to have a 3-inch height advantage, a 3-inch reach advantage. And I think he comes in with a distinct finishing edge potential in this fight. And I think that's why the line is priced where it is. However, you go and look at the under 2.5 at plus 154, you're like, hold on, wait a second. Angelosa, like, he does the chicken dance every fight, but he doesn't necessarily get put to sleep. The guru was telling me. So I got to listen, right? Brian Battle, now he's got real finishing like instincts. He is someone that when the pressure's put on him, he's able to respond. Gabe Green gets in his face, eats a crazy counter hook and goes down. Takashi Sato, same idea. Gets a little bit too out there. Huge head kick lands. You see him get finished. He hurts Petrosky. Petrosky shoots. You know, Battle could have ended up on his back. Instead, he's finishing the front choke. So there's plenty of different instances where Battle hurt someone and found the finish. So, like, if this is going to be Reese McKee round 3 vibes where Angelosa's, like, running away, like, along the cage and trying to get away, like, I think Battle could end up finding the finish. Now, in this specific fight, I could see where Angelosa might land more volume on paper and where he has the takedown upside. It's just I don't think he's necessarily safe doing any of it, and I think he's going to end up getting hurt along the way. I've seen him get hurt too many times in fights. And hey, listen, Brian Battle, I mean, he's not perfect. So minus 185, I'm not recommending a money line play. But I am super interested in Brian Battle inside the distance. Even if he hurts Losa on the feet and doesn't necessarily get the knockout, but Losa goes shooting for a sloppy takedown, it could be Petrosky City all over again. So I'm willing to say inside the distance here. We're getting plus money on the under 2.5. And Battle, I mean, He's shown that he can be dropped also. So would it be safer to just play plus money on the fight doesn't go? I might be getting there. But my pick in this fight is Brian Battle.
Did you say Petrosky style?
Yeah, like Brian Battle choked out Andre Petrosky.
Oh, he choked him out with a...
front choke.
Ninja choke.
Oh, my God. Oh, Guru, you're onto something. You're onto something.
You're the one that said it.
Well, so are we looking for the ninja choke on the last ninja from Brian Battle? What's the odds on the sub?
It's the odds on the finish are plus 225.
I mean, that's good enough. You don't want to get greedy, but
the submission is also only plus 400.
Plus 400. Probably not good.
They actually have it as the more likely outcome compared to a KO at plus 500. And I could see a club and sub. When TV and I were talking about this fight earlier in the week, I kind of capped it at like minus 150, minus 160 Brian Battle. And that's basically where the line was earlier in the week. And now that the line has kind of moved to 185, it's really, am I dog or, it's like basically dog or pass. And I just kind of lean on the pass. I'm just not super sold on the finish. And maybe I'll see something later in the week or change my mind. But I'm just not super sold on it. One thing I will say, and I've said this for a while, I believe I even made a case for Brian Battle as like a performer of the year or some sort of award for our award show, TV Shut It Down. But what I've seen from Brian Battle is that, and rightfully so, he shut it down. But what
Rightfully so.
But what I've seen from Brian Battle is he's an overperformer, right? He's not necessarily the most athletic guy. Right. He's not necessarily the fastest. Is he perfect? No, he makes mistakes, but he's just seemed to pull through. He's just kind of has a quality where when the lights are on, he knows how to perform. He's in his hometown and gets the 14-second knockout. He's pulling off rear naked choke submissions in his last fight. He has two knockouts in the UFC and they're both under a minute. Like there's something to be said about that. A guy that hits that hard or is just fully focused as soon as the fight starts. So if there's a finish, I kind of see it that way. I just kind of see him staying true to form and maybe clipping Angelosa before Ange even gets started, whether that be by, you know, literally knocking him out or like Wind Baby's just saying, maybe a club and sub. But I'm just not like super duper sold on it, especially as the fight were to maybe go a little bit deeper. But I get it. I don't hate it. I really don't hate it. Maybe Prop can talk me into it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a bet on this fight, but Battle Round 2 and definitely like Round 3 is definitely interesting to me. Yeah, like Battle Round 3 I can get on DraftKings for plus 1,100. I'm pretty sure Bet365 is plus 1,400, which I just think is pretty crazy. Like when I watch Losa, it's like, in the McKee fight, like, it was pretty close up until the point where Losa was taking him down the second round and just, like, unleashed, like, 26 punches when he was holding his hand down up against the fence when he had him down. And then he just unleashed fury of hell on him. I know McKee ended up dropping Losa at the end of the third round as well. But, like, Battle just has a way of pushing through adversity. Like, when he gets hurt, he ends up just, like, pushing through when he gets hurt. And then he just puts the pressure on people. I've actually had a pretty bad read on Brian Battle's last three fights, if I'm going to be honest with you guys. Like, I had Gabe Green money line. That went to shit. I had the Fakhrudinov fight doesn't go to decision. And, I mean, Battle's just durable as hell. And I had AJ Fletcher's spread last time. So that didn't go well either. But, like, I just like how Battle is, like, this pressure. I like how he is on the outside. I feel like it's going to be hard for Losa to find him. I like how Losa fights off his jab, though. I feel like he's just going to look for the right hand. I feel like his wrestling is something he's been trying to work on because he loses at range a lot, and they give him, like, these rangier fighters. So I know Battle's, like, minus 185, but he's minus 185 for a reason. He keeps improving, and he just keeps getting better and better. And he has four of his five wins in the UFC or finishes, but I feel like he could hurt Losa here at a point in this fight. I feel like Losa's going to come in. He's going to shoot his head up against the fence. I feel like there's going to be a front choke opportunity. I mean, I might go back to the bread and butter and just go sub 2 and sub 3, but he can get the knockout, though. But I like 2-3, but the best bet, I think, for the fight is Battle Round 3 decision on DraftKings at plus 110.
Ooh,
I feel like it's a good way to chop the minus 185, but I like to play big numbers, so I'm probably going to play 2-3.
I'm going to meditate on all of that because the finish is still so interesting to me as well. It's such a fun thing to root for, but a difficult thing to root for in a guy that has not been finished yet in his UFC career or
in his pro career. Loser only has one submission as well, and he's just starting to wrestle now. And he's wrestling with guys like Michael Chandler in the gym, so he's just exploding into all his takedowns and probably like not thinking about any chokes or nothing when he's just shooting. So it's interesting, the sub.
Yeah, plus 230 for the finish on FanDuel, so that's a little bit better than
that's
the
not 25. That bad.
I've definitely seen worse. It, you know, I think it's worth taking a little shot on here if you want to stack up some props. I'd start with the inside the distance first, you know. All right.
Oh boy.
Ugh. All right. So last week we had the guy.
Why is this? Like, why is this sanctioned? What is happening? Can somebody explain to me what's happening?
I don't know. Maybe OSP thought that they were offering him Shogun Hua again.
Like, you know, Dan Levy's telling me he's making 100K or more a fight. It's like, you, how can you pay this guy that number to put out the performances he's putting out? I get that he's a legend, but like.
So let's put it this way. You're making an investment, right? So sometimes you're not necessarily investing that money in OSP, but you're investing it on the opponent that can blast his head into the
Worse. You're making my point for me. They gave
him Kennedy. Yeah, but you're also not a businessman. So you're not understanding that OSP is grandfathered in on a contract before the UFC started signing everybody off a fucking
contract. Of course I understand why the contract is what it is.
Well, that's why OSP is still getting paid that much compared to all the other
guys. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying why is he getting paid that. That's not what I said.
What did you say then?
What I'm saying is how is he still part of the organization? Are they like, how many more fights could he possibly have left on his deal? You don't want to keep paying this bloated contract for this dude to take one shot versus Felipe Lins and curl up. So what is the long game here? That's what I'm
right.
saying.
So the long game is now you use him to get highlights for your young prospects to build off of the name OSP because
you gave him Kennedy and Zetrakwu. There's no name to build. The dude is not good.
I mean, they've been trying to build Kennedy,
but that's because they like the African market. But that doesn't. That's it. It's just I don't know. It's just
I weird. Mean, he's also like 31, has 10 fights in the UFC at light heavyweight, and has been improving in every fight. Then when he takes a step up against guys like Jacoby, it's just a bit too far. You know, like he has a couple of solid wins on his resume there.
He fought like a fucking moron in that last fight.
What do you mean?
He's never fought like that once in his life, and everyone was giving him shit on the internet, and then he fought how everyone wanted him to fight, and he got knocked out in a minute. He fought like an idiot.
Yeah, I just don't know. Like, I don't – like, where did his quality wins? The Ulberg win when Ulberg gassed out and gave it to him? Like, what – his Danilo Marquez win? Ooh.
I mean,
you're a killer.
Listen, he's got better wins than OSP does recently. And my point
but you're still making my point. How is this guy fighting? How is it the main card? Props are like,
even though you
about?
Hate Kennedy and Zetrakwu, obviously the UFC likes him for some reason.
I mean, you guys are making me think about life when I bet the over 1.5 in this fight. Like,
no, that's the only way to play it. I love it. I actually love it.
It's scary, but like I think it hits though.
Because he must be coming out here to do something, right? OSP, like he's got to try. I mean, he's somewhat trying in Shogun Hua fight, right?
And
he's getting cracked by counters by versus Shogun Hua. Like it's bad.
Yeah.
You can't do this for even 10 seconds versus Kennedy.
And just got knocked out in the minute last fight. So maybe he might try to take it a little easy. You don't know.
Is OSP live?
How risque are you feeling, Pepe? That's the real question.
Pepe.
He minus 700 on Kennedy is insane. But
can we bet him specific? This is what I want. I want to go to a specific book that will let me bet his specific submission method. Mm-hmm. And I will take him by the OSP choke, and that's it. That's the only play I want.
That's disrespectful, man. Jesus wow. Christ.
Yeah, I mean, listen, ultimately, the way that this goes wrong for Kennedy is him just being an inexperienced striker from distance. He has to, like, really get the fight in the clinch here. What's up, Phantom? How you doing? Formerly known as the Ghost. Appreciate you. But listen, I mean, ultimately here, there's a reason why they have Kennedy at this line, and it's kind of the stages they're at in their career. But if you're playing Kennedy at minus 650, I mean, you have some serious issues, and we're going to be sending Wheezy to your house with a bag of oranges. We're calling Gamblers Anonymous immediately. And quite frankly, none of the props you could play on this fight on the Kennedy side are going to give you enough value. I don't understand it. Now, what I do understand is picking him to win. I think that happens at a high clip. But, I mean, OSP, I got to imagine this guy's just happy to get out of there. You know, I mean, his wins are against, like, Alonzo Menafield. He's way too small. He had no reach and no, like, game plan. And then in his win against Shogun, I mean, that's even a split decision against the corpse of Shogun Hua.
That fight was on a main card, by the way.
And, horrible. And so more to my point, it's gross. Like, what are we watching? It's so bad. I just I honestly hope – listen, I don't know what I want to hope. Part of me wants to hope that Kennedy and Zetrakwu pulls a big boy from last week and just knocks him out in 10 seconds so I don't have to watch this fight. And part of me wants to take the over 1.5 and just hope that this slop fest just goes on for stupid amount of time, because it'll show even more how terrible Kennedy and Zetrakwu is. So that actually sounds good. Let's go with an over 1.5 just because. I bet we can get fight to start round two at even money. So I like it.
Hey, round two finish, probably an interesting, like a round two, round three.
It could be 20 on that river. It's not bad.
Ooh. Yeah, so that's my shot. Fight to start round two. I'll even get a little half a round extra.
What are you thinking, prop?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be over 1.5 here. I'm going to be sweating it out a little bit. But, like, I feel like it goes over, though. I mean, OSP did go over 1.5 with Jamal Hill. I mean, I just feel like Kennedy just came out very stupid last fight. Like, I know we're talking about OSP here, but, like, he has something to come in to learn into this fight. I know that's why the UFC is kind of giving him this fight. Like, that's just not how he fights. Like, I understand in the Devin Clark fight, like, yeah, he was getting rocked, and then he rocked Devin Clark really bad, but when you watch Kennedy fight really urgent, it's when he's getting pressured and when he's getting hurt. I don't think OSP is going to hurt him. I feel like both guys are going to kind of stare at each other. I feel like it's going to take guys like a minute to like kind of like find range. And Kennedy literally is like, he's like, we want to start late. Like, he's not really a first round starter. And when he did, he got knocked out in the first round. So, yeah, I mean, I think the over 1.5, is it risky? Yes, because you're kind of hoping on the durability of OSP. But I think it goes over, like, just in case, because Kennedy has a lot of round two finishes and sometimes he gets them early, I would just take fight starts round two. I feel like you can get even money there. Is it risky? Yes, but I feel like it's the best way to bet this fight. And I might sprinkle Kennedy round three as well, because if it gets to round three, I mean, he's going to finish him in a third round. But, Kennedy by points is, like, plus 450. Like,
yeah, it's that's too juicy.
I feel like it's just a little bit laughable. Like, I don't know. It's just me. Like, I feel like this is just going to be a shit show and it goes to decision. That's just me.
I love it. I think that both guys are, like, so not, like, good enough that they absolutely could just fuck around and do it. Like, fight doesn't go the distance is minus 550. How many
That's
people
so are disgusting.
Gonna be, how many, right? How many people are going to be parlaying that? So. That's Or like just parlaying some sort of violence. Oh, this fight's guaranteed violence. Like, we'll see.
Yeah. We will see. I mean, my analysis for how it happens is Kennedy and Zetrakwu in the clinch landing huge knees to the body, and OSP just doesn't want to be there anymore. That's probably how it happens. But I appreciate a little fade the narrative. It's going to be that wide of a price. That's just my analysis on how the fight probably ends up finishing. Like, I don't think Kennedy is special from distance, and I don't think he's a great – he's actually improved his wrestling in top game, so he could coast to that decision in all craziness with just takedowns in top game, bro. Maybe that's the missing piece. Maybe that's how it gets there.
His best performance – let's be real. His best performance is his win versus Devin Clark, right? We got to see that live.
That was awesome, yeah.
he loses round one terribly to Ion Cutelaba, and then Ion Cutelaba is one of the stupidest fighters in UFC history and cannot get that done, right? We had Felipe Lenz. That was all.
Could you imagine playing Ion Cutelaba at Chuck? My God.
No, he's a favorite, and he's won 3 of his 9 UFC fights. I don't know what anybody's doing. Not good. And then he beats Carl Roberson in round 3. Kennedy Nzechukwu is not a good fighter. Minus 650 is insane. Makes no sense. What was he lying versus Felipe Lins? Versus Felipe Lins, he was, if it will load. Come on. Sometimes I hate Tapology with all the ads. It always moves around. Yeah. He was only a plus 185 underdog versus Felipe Lins. So the line has gone way too far.
Fair enough. All right. I think we broke this one down. I mean, we're picking Kennedy, right? Is that where everyone's at?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. We're moving on. We got C-Rod, Christian Rodriguez versus the Midwest Chopper, Isaac Dolgarian. Guess which one is technically the official TV nickname? C-Rod. The Midwest Chopper. Do you know what that's from? I have no idea. I'm interested. But we've got C-Rod at plus 160, Isaac Dolgarian living in an RV outside the gym at minus 192 now. Listen, if you guys aren't following us on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, but listen, I'm going to give you stuff that I think the line's going to go crazy on, because just like I got reverse CLV'd in the main event, well, I gave you guys Isaac Dolgarian at minus 125 on X. So if you're not giving us a follow there, you're obviously messing up. And quite frankly, I thought it was disrespectful to have Dolgarian lined at that number. Typically, you see guys coming off of, like, you know, big debuts. And generally, like, I thought it was disrespectful how he was lined in his UFC debut. It's just that Francis Marshall was the more recent Contender Series winner, but Dolgarian was clearly the more talented. I think that's the case here, too. He's clearly the bigger guy, and he's clearly more talented. C-Rod is all about weathering the storm and turning the tables once someone realizes they can't get a finish. Like, I know Dolgarian hasn't been outside the first round, but when you watch how he finishes at the end of round one against Francis Marshall, he's running around doing bell hops. He looks totally fucking fine. His cardio, non-issue. He's training at elevation in Factory X. Like, this guy is a top-level wrestler in high school and I think college, too. It was a little bit hairy. I don't think he actually went to college. I think, like, he was in the States for high school, got injured. In college, he got there as a freshman, but it just didn't end up working out. Now, I mean, the Midwest Chopper, I mean, he's training out of one of the better Muay Thai gyms in the United States. Factory X, like, they have legit stuff. And you watch his leg kicks, man, like, they are punishing. Now, he's also not stupid from distance. He's got feints. He's got in and out movement. Dolgarian looks clean on the feet. It's just, why fuck around there if you don't have to? The second he feels any danger on the feet, he's changing levels. It's the signature single leg. He's keeping his neck safe from front choke threats like C-Rod's going to try to do. C-Rod's going to jump Gilly. C-Rod's going to end up on his back. And whether it's 3 rounds of controlling ground and pound or run round of a dominant finish, Dolgarian's got this thing locked up. And he's my most confident play. He's my first 5-unit play since Piotr Jan. But, I mean, like, listen, I haven't been unloading the clip unless it's on something that I really feel confident in. Piotr Jan was one. Isaac Dolgarian, man, he's a special prospect. And I thought minus 125 was just straight up disrespectful.
100%. TV tipped me off to the line. I actually went in at 6 units, and I feel really, really good about it. That I messed up last time for whatever reason, thinking that Francis Marshall, whatever, would be able to keep it on the feet or make it a problem. I just totally underestimated the level of Isaac Dolgarian. And I believe, didn't he win an award, TB, for on Chronic Combat? Or was he nominated for one?
Yeah, he was a fighter to watch.
Fighter to watch. I just did that again. Fighter to watch. Yeah, absolutely. And he is a fighter to watch. So when we knew to look out for him, and you can absolutely see it from what this line did. The line absolutely exploded. He's minus 200 in some areas. One of the big things, I'm not sure the TV mentioned it, but I think one of the big things here is that C-Rod moving up weight, right? He's been a weight bully throughout his career, especially in the UFC, right? Loses round one to Raul Rosas, mind you, with grappling. And then Raul Rosas, what, gets tired and C-Rod takes over? I think that's exactly where the handicap lies. Isaac Dolgarian's a better grappler. He's a better wrestler. And he's got better cardio. And I think he's going to smash him. I think you can even take a shot on Isaac Dolgarian in round one. Because all of his career wins are by round one finish. So why not take a shot there? Small cage is going to breed more action. And like I said, I think Isaac Dolgarian gets it done. Prop, I'm certainly curious to hear what you got, because I want to hear that you're on Isaac.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually on the other side as you guys, but I got reverse CLV. I got Rodriguez at plus 112, and I put 1.25 units on him. I just feel like it should kind of be a pick-em fight. Like, I know Dolgarian, you know, as he made finals in his freshman year of college in wrestling. He's a two-time state champ, and they were saying for the third time he should have been a three-time state champ, but he got disqualified actually in the finals. But they said, DC said he shouldn't have been disqualified. He said it was rigged, so he should be a three-time state champ. But, like, I feel like Dolgarian's regional scene, like, I just feel like he's still not tested at all. Like, I understand, like, in the Francis Marshall fight, he took him down and absolutely beat, like, brutalized him with elbows. I cashed on him round one there, plus 650 when it opened, and I had the fight doesn't go also in that fight. But here, I feel like Rodriguez is going to be able to kind of push the pace on him. I feel like he's seen the game plan of Dolgarian. I feel like he can get up and sprawl on him. I mean, just go watch the JSP fight. If Dolgarian puts his neck anywhere near where JSP did in the first 2 minutes, I don't think Dolgarian's fighting himself out of that choke. I feel like Rodriguez is really good with the counterboxing as well. I feel like he's going to be able to feint with Rodriguez as well, feint with Dolgarian as well. I know Dolgarian has good leg kicks, but C-Rod like avoids the leg kicks because he's always on that boxing pressure. He doesn't really stand that range, and I even think he could mix in some grappling as well. So I feel like the line now at plus 160, like I feel like there's way more value, obviously, than plus 112. I'm not going to add because I feel like if Dolgarian can just keep the takedowns and stay away from the submissions, he can cruise to victory here. You guys killed the line movement here, so good shout out to you guys. But I kind of want to see what Rodriguez sub 2 and sub 3 is going to be, because if Dolgarian does beat him in the first round and Rodriguez continues to get up and he makes it pretty close, I'll also be live betting him as well. So, yeah, that's the way I'll be looking at this fight. But I'm on the Rodriguez money line, and if I can get the sub at 6-1, I'll be sprinkling the sub as well here.
That's fair. I think the single leg keeps him safe. I think Pierce has proven time and again his double leg and, like, sticking his neck on the inside. It's like Dolgarian, I've seen him kind of slick about stuffing reversals and using high-level wrestling techniques to avoid scrambles.
Yeah, and, like, I know, like, C-Rod's also training in the Pettis gym, and, like, they were also saying how, like, they do such unusual sprawls and such unusual submissions and, like, such unusual positions. I feel like Dolgarian just hasn't seen that, and I don't feel like, the way how Pettis' gym is and the way how, like, Pettis was in his career, people haven't seen the style way he is. And, like, you can see in Rodriguez's submission game as well, like, Jonathan Pierce at the end of the third round was literally on his, like, on his hands and knees breathing for his life. Like, I just feel like, I just feel like now plus 160, if you like C-Rod, get on him right now. Because I just feel like it's crazy value on him here.
But, yeah, I get it. And this is why we bring people on to have a conversation. And listen, just because I have a big bet on something doesn't mean I'm right. So you as the viewer needs to piece through this and find where you come to terms with the fight. And that's the best part about us, having an open, respectful conversation.
I agree completely, and I also think that if you are a C-Rod fan, that you wait and maybe even watch live to see what happens, because if maybe round one's an ass-whooping, but he doesn't get finished, maybe you get in then, because C-Rod's going to be, what, you know, plus 400 or some shit, and you're going to get a really good entry on him, and there is still the question of his cardio, even though it does look impressive. We still haven't technically seen it.
And how does C-Rod actually carry the extra weight of 145? I know he did it on short notice, but now he's actually going to be, like, preparing to be a 145er going forward. Like, sometimes that can affect your cardio, having the extra weight, even when you're moving up. And he's not going to have the size advantage. And I think he loses round one at about, like, a 99% clip. I think there's, like, a 0.1% chance he wins round one. So right off the bat, he's losing on handicap. I'm serious. I'm serious, 0.1%. I don't think you're beating Dolgarian in round one.
Anybody, so, Francis
Ngannou. Listen, take this, clip it, say what you guys want if I'm wrong. I appreciate it. But listen, I'm gonna be convicted with my takes here. So we're moving on, and this is a fight where I won't give any conviction on my take. But we got Penny Kianzad Banzai versus My Chemical Romance, Macy Shea Son. I mean, she's got them good vibes going with the hair over there. It's a great time. Hell? Bro, she definitely listens to some emo music. But we got Penny Kianzad at +195, Macy Shea Son at -238. I think the line's correct. Well, so I know there's no
that I can make you stay.
Guru.
Where's your heart? I go.
All right, fair enough. Hey, listen, I brought it up on myself, right? I appreciate you.
Yes, you did.
Taking me back to high school here. You guys should see
a fellow emo kid who doesn't like My Chemical Romance.
You know? Exactly.
I like My Chemical Romance more than this fight.
yeah, honestly. But realistically here, how about this prop? What are you thinking here, man?
Oh, man, I ain't got nothing on this fight. I don't care about this fight at all, right, man.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No, I mean, here's what I'll say. I mean, it's a grudge. I think it may need to win, but like, I just maybe as a parlay piece, but like, I'm not taking her -240. If I didn't get -170, so that's why I'm passing you.
Yeah.
And what? How does she make weight here at 135?
Exactly. That's also another reason why too. I mean, she constantly misses weight. She slows down also, and she always looks like shit on the scales. But oh she God, looks sorry. Really like, in like really good shape now. On her Instagram, she looks like she's in the best shape of her career. But yeah, I'm not betting this fight, man.
I think this makes sense. It's actually kind of a grudge match. It's the rematch everybody's been clamoring for. Macy Shea Son actually beat Penny Kianzad to win the Ultimate Fighter at 145. So that was that was something earlier in her career, and now they get to run it back here. So, yeah, I kind of agree with what you guys are saying. I lean Macy Shea Son, and I lean her by decision. I think when it comes down to is Penny Kianzad, I feel like to win her fights is kind of becomes reliant on winning in the clinch and clinch strikes, and it's just exactly where Macy Shea Son wants to be in the clinch and dominating you. She spends, 41% of her time in control positions and offensive grappling, so you can't go there. If you're Penny Kianzad, so that's problematic. So give me Macy Shea Son, but like you guys said, weight cut problems and general, she hasn't fought in a year and a half.
Jeez.
Since she goes 1-1 with Irina Aldana and gets up kicked in the liver and just goes down. Like you don't even attempt to fight through it. You just like, oh, I've been shot, and you just go down. Like, you at least fall on top of her. Like, do something. You're not unconscious.
There's Guru finally. He woke back up. I was going to say, you were so unenthused by this fight. It sounded like you were falling asleep.
I am.
So were the live viewers. They were getting pretty tired of it, too. But, hey, we're back. Thank you so much, everybody that's in the live chat. Please throw up the double birds just like Guru and give us a like on the video. Please subscribe if you haven't already. It costs you nothing. We love having a great time. Check out MMA Propaholic. The dude is killing it. Bet MMA X on YouTube as well. Follow his content. And all three of us, you can catch us all rotating Saturdays on Best Bet with DFS by the Numbers. Big Bad Brady. All right. We got GM3, Gerald Meerschaert versus Bam Bam, Brian Barberena. Oh, my God. We got two Bam Bams on the same card. I didn't even put it together. Holy shit until we got here. This is incredible. We've got double Bam Bam action. It's Gerald Meerschaert. And quite frankly, I sit here struggling to understand -245 at this juncture. I know that Bam Bam has been going up and down in weight, moving back and forth, having uninspiring performances. But if you just go and take a look at the list of names that this man was fighting, I mean, Mahmoud Muradov, Gunnar Nelson in England, Rafael Dos Anjos. I mean, why are they sanctioning those fights? This is the type of fight that he should have been in the whole time. The good old, you know, crazy uncles at the backyard barbecue brawl. Like, I think we're getting some shirts off action here, fellas. I got Bam Bam. I think it gets spicy. I think he's going to land the damage. And Gerald, even if he doesn't get knocked out, I just think he's not going to be able to finish Bam Bam. So in that case, I got to go with the dog here. +200. I mean, like, as small of a play as you feel good about, but I need to have some action on this degenerate fight. Guru, you had something interesting. What are you thinking?
Listen, this play is about as fading the narrative as it gets, even for Chronic Combat here. But what I really do like is, and by the way, you can take alternates on it as well. I even like the alternate price. But I kind of like fight goes the distance or the over 2.5 type play. And the reason is that I feel like Gerald being chinny, while I don't want to say it's overstated, I just feel like it's overblown. Knocked out by prime Thiago Santos, knocked out by Khamzat Chimaev, knocked out by Joe Pfeiffer. I mean, these guys are legitimate knockout artists. Then you've got somebody like Brian Barberena, who, you know, like TB said, is facing high-level competition, fights that, you know, shouldn't even be sanctioned per se, right? He gets beat down by Muradov, he gives up 13 takedowns. But I just feel like you said, I'm just not convinced about Gerald's cardio, and I'm not sure that he's gonna hurt Brian enough to get the submission. So I kind of see them grinding a little bit more. And you know, honestly, Gerald on the feet, like, it's problematic. So if he's not getting takedowns with control time, Brian, who's shown to get up, right? The only way that these guys can land double-digit takedowns on you is if you fight your way back up to the feet. So even with 13 takedowns, Muradov only has 5 minutes of control time. Like, he's got to fight really hard to keep it. So Gerald, who might get tired with that, judges who don't give a shit about control time with no damage anymore, Brian is going to land all the damage on the feet, so could be dicey. Can't possibly play Gerald at chalk. They've even taken our best prop away from us with, you know, Gerald sub being juiced plus 120. Who? No way, no freaking way, man. I'm good on that. I like the opposite of violence. What do you think, prop? Am I crazy?
No, I mean, I don't think you're crazy. I mean, I parlayed Mearshard with Mike Davis, but I parlayed Mearshard at minus 194 and Mike Davis at minus 241 earlier in the week. So I got like plus 115 on the parlay. So I just like the fight that just really stuck out to me is the Matt Brown fight. I mean, he's just like Barbarina's getting out wrestled by a fucking 40-year-old Matt Brown. And Matt Brown had his back and passed him out multiple times. And every single time Barberena gets taken down, he gives the backup right against the fence. And every single time he literally ends up in a takedown, it's always up against the fence. Like, his corner literally tells him to always use the fence to get up. It's not the worst thing ever, but when it's against a guy like Mearshard who can literally just take the back right away, it's probably the worst idea for him to do it. And I feel like everyone's just saying, like, it's going to be a blowout on the feet just because Barberena has pressure. Like, the way how Barberena fights is going to put him into the clinch and right on his ass every single time. It just depends if Mearshard can make the wrestling look good. And I feel like here he can. I mean, I feel like he only went for like 3 takedowns. He took Bruno Silva down at the end of the first round, which I liked. Petroski, he took down Petroski, but Petroski threw up a triangle right away. So he ended up just kind of getting out of there. But Petroski's consistent with submissions off his back. But the other fight he was going for takedowns with is in the Stolfus fight, and Dustin Stolfus is actually like a pretty solid grappler. So I think he's a better grappler than Barberena as well. So yeah, I like Mearshard here. I mean, if Barberena is going to win, I feel like the over hits. So if you like Barberena, I would just take him by decision. It's like 5-1. I feel like that's a pretty good way to play Barberena. But yeah, I like Mearshard this week. I feel like he gets it done. I think he honestly makes it look pretty convincing.
Yeah, I'd say that there's probably a 50% chance that we're getting a Gerald sub here, right? that's probably like his win, like his most clear win condition.
Damn, you might have sold me.
I know. That's
don't let me sell you. Don't let me sell you. Like, if you guys have your picks, go with your picks.
No, and that's the thing. I think you could hear in my breakdown, like, I'm kind of waffling. Like, I'm not fully convinced either way. I mean, Gerald looks like he's in fantastic shape, too. So he's young. He's actually, Gerald's older. How the fuck is that?
And he's been sparring with Rachmaninov too. He was the lead sparring. I think he was like one of the lead sparring partners. Yeah, there's videos of him sparring with Rachmaninov.
Gerald round one submission at plus 330.
I mean, I don't think you need to play with specific rounds.
You think plus 120 is good enough?
Well, I think, listen, Bam Bam, I mean, generally he's tough and willing to fight through a few things. So I don't think it would necessarily be immediate if it gets there. But, I mean, like we were kind of talking about in the breakdown, it's like, well, Bam Bam's going to make the takedown available. It's just I thought his scrambling ability, willingness to get back to his feet, and Gerald has okay top control. It's not elite. But he is opportunistic with his subs. That is something that it cannot be denied. So
27 submission wins for Gerald Meerschaert.
Well, this is definitely not one of the fights I'm most confident on. So perhaps it'll take a little redigging. But listen, man, like I said, it's the smallest of small dog shots on Bam Bam. Like if you can put 0.2 units and feel good about it, like, you know, do 0.2 units and do it, you know, like a little $5 never hurt anybody.
Oh, it did.
You can parade around saying that you bet it on X, you know. So here we go. We got Lethal Natan Levy versus Beast Boy Mike Davis. I'm curious, do they let Natan Levy do any press or media or like a post fight?
Oh my God.
If he wins, do they let him bring a flag out? Like, what are the optics here? I asked this as a legitimate I'm really curious. But anyways, in the breakdown of this fight here, I think that Natan Levy is going to be lethalized by Mike Davis. I think he's kind of worse in every single aspect of fighting.
Yeah.
He's got zero finishing instincts. He's got zero power. He's got so top control and like spinning shit from the outside. Like, Natan, you fought the most tailor-made competition since you've been off the Contender Series. And like Rafa Garcia, if you were the guy you said that we thought you were supposed to be, like that fight wouldn't have looked the way that it did. Like, let's be serious. Like, you're supposed to be the better athlete and the better grappler, and you're just, quite frankly, not. And Beast Boy, I think he's better legitimately everywhere. He's the cleanest parlay piece of the week, but he also loves getting in firefights and fighting kind of close. It's just I think he has this guy so outgunned. I don't know why they have him booked against Levy rather than to test Levy. And, you know, I think he's willing to fail a test.
Yeah, one of the weird things about Mike Davis is his lack of activity, right? No booked fights, no pullouts, nothing. He just hasn't fights. And I didn't even remember that he fought Slava Claus. The only fight I remembered was the Mason Jones fight. I'm like, where's this guy been? And honestly, the Slava Claus fight wasn't like, I mean, it's impressive he wins handedly, but it's like, there's nothing like unbelievably impressive about it per se. He's got good striking. And he's a solid wrestler that, you know, uses his well-timed takedowns a lot to take breaks on the feet. Cause he, I don't know. I just don't really trust his cardio. And one of the fights here that really, I think, told me how this fight's going to play out was the Rafa Garcia fight for Natan Levy. I mean, he's getting out grappled and he can't get up off the mat, and he's not winning via submission off his back. So I don't know how this guy is lethal at all. I mean, the only thing lethal about him is us making us watch his fights. So I am, yeah, it's just not great. So I kind of like Mike Davis by decision. I just think it goes over. Natan Levy is fairly durable. The only loss in his career is by decision. And Mike Davis has kind of shown himself to be, just a bit of decisionator in the UFC. Hasn't fought really. His best fight, right, is his best opponent is Gilbert Burns, where he loses by submission. So he loses to Sadiq Youssef by decision on Dana White Contender Series in a great fight. But again, not super impressed. So want to see something impressive from Mike Davis here. I'd love to see him get a finish, but I don't think so. What do you think, Prop?
Yeah, I parlayed Davis with Meerschaert as I was talking about. So I like Davis in this spot. I mean, I think he has Levy outmatched everywhere. Like, especially in the boxing as well. Like, in the commentary, like, Levy literally just struggles with, like, boxing, and that's what DC was saying as well. Like, even in the Garcia fight, like, Garcia was just out-dogging him in the boxing exchanges. Like, Levy just likes to have a clean striking match at range. He likes to throw a lot of spitting shit. He throws a lot of body kicks. Davis isn't going to give him that range. Davis is going to close the range and land a lot of the harder shots. I didn't like how, like, literally how Mike Breeden is fighting, how Mike Breeden was fighting the Tom Levy late is how Mike Davis is going to fight him from the very first round. So I feel like it's just going to be pretty much of a shit show for Levy. I don't think Levy has that good wrestling either. I don't think his submission game is that good either. I just feel like the one good thing that Levy only has is just maintaining range, but I just don't think Davis is going to let him get the range at all. And I think Davis could take him down as well. I don't like Levy's takedown defense. And even in the Valdez fight, like, Valdez landed big shots on him in an exchange, and he had Levy hurt, but Valdez just couldn't follow up with it. Davis is a lot more technical with the boxing, so if Davis KO is that good money, I might take the shot, especially in the late rounds as well, because Levy just, I don't like how Levy slows down a lot. Just because he uses so much lateral movement and just all kicks, he doesn't really throw a lot of hands at all as well, so... Yeah, I think Davis is going to fuck him up, man. I think not at minus 400 now. I want to be parlaying him at, but if you guys got him at minus 300, minus 250, that's a good line on him.
Agreed.
Yeah, I love it. I like that finish idea. I like the round three idea, given Levy's bad gas tank, quite frankly. You've seen him slow. Mike Breeden. Yeah, man. Yeah.
And we see Mike Davis and what he could do with damaging people in the Thomas Gifford fight. I mean, my goodness. Yep.
That guy is not UFC level, though.
I mean,
yeah, but neither is Levy.
Like, still, though, he showed how much damage he can inflict, though, going, like, especially into a third round. So,
I'm going to tell you guys right now, I have absolutely nothing on this fight.
Oh, I have a lot.
Ted, sell me.
Scary.
All right, you know what prop? I'll give the quick intro. Here we got Josie Nunez versus Chelsea Chronic Chandler. She's also a triple C. Shout out to the Diaz camp. However, listen, we got minus 148 Nunez, plus 124 Chandler. Prop, what do you got cooking here?
Yeah, I mean, I have 1.5 units on Chandler at plus 120. She's going to be a much more physical fighter here. She does a great job at getting her opponents up against the cage and using her ground and pound. She has good inside-outside leg trips and packs power on the feet as well, which she actually was, like, showing after she rocked Dumont. She was, like, after she got rocked against Dumont in the second and third round, there were some moments that she was actually landing pretty hard on Dumont up until Dumont took her down, which Nunez just doesn't take down anyone at all in any of her fights. Like, even on Nunez's regional scene back in 2019 against Barbosa, she was losing the whole entire fight up until she got the late round knockout because she was getting taken down the whole time and she couldn't get up. She's only a blue belt in BJJ as well, and she only headhunts on the feet. She doesn't mix body kicks at all. She doesn't throw any leg kicks either, and she doesn't mix in any takedowns. Like, Farron and Malecki, they didn't shoot any takedowns as well. And the only takedowns that were shot on her at the UFC level are against Ramona Pascual, who literally shot the laziest and most awful takedowns I've actually have seen and landed them and had her in controlling positions. And Chandler was plus 120 against Norman Dumont, and she's plus 120 now against a girl in Nunez who has no grappling. She's only a blue belt in BJJ. She only headhunts. She doesn't mix up her strikes. And Chandler literally is going to be way more physical and way more aggressive here. And she wins moments up against the fence. She could definitely cage push here. She could definitely take her down with body lock takedowns as well. And she's shown it on her Invicta regional scene. She's pretty durable as well. Like, she has gotten rocked and she gets up against the fence right away. And she grits through. She has that Stockton attitude to her name. So I like her in this spot. I think if she can get on top of Nunez, I think she could honestly potentially ground and pound her and finish her as well. I think the sub is live. I think the ground and pound is live. I think she could win by a dominant unanimous decision. So that's why I just went with the money line. But yeah, I like Chandler here, man. I just don't think she should be the dog. I think she should be a minus 150 favorite. I think she's honestly going to expose the grappling of Nunez. And I even think she can crack Nunez as well. To say Chandler's not live to crack her, she has a good overhand left as well. And Nunez's cardio, I just don't think Nunez's cardio, honestly, is that great. I know she has three decision wins, but it's against the bottom of the barrel. And this is the best girl on Nunez's resume so far besides Tala Santos back in 2013, which doesn't matter to me at all, is going to grapple her here and get her down. So, yeah, I like Chandler at plus money here. I'm confident in her.
I love it. And honestly, this is where we line up, Prop. This is great. We're back on track. Yeah. I got Chelsea Chandler to – Like, if you're betting Josie Nunez minus 148, and then next thing you know, there's outside trip and Chandler's just sitting on top of her. If you've watched Josie Nunez's regional tape, you've seen it over and over again. Shitty regional finders on top for 2.5 or, you know, 1.5 rounds, 2 rounds. Next thing you know, they stand them up. Or Josie, like, somehow gets to her feet, and then it's like the fighter's dead. The fight's over. It's Chelsea Chandler got too much too soon in Norma Dumont. And I mean, like, Norma Dumont, she's got a lot going on there. So, Chelsea, I don't blame you for trying to run away. That was a tough one. But Josie Nunez, I mean, listen, when you can't handle the likes of Sarah Farron and all these other fighters, when you're like minus 500, there's a reason the market's readjusted here. And Chandler on the step down plus money, let's have a good time, because this is not Norma Dumont straight. Like, Norma Dumont's boxing and counter timing is as legit as it gets. And she's got calf kicks and offensive wrestling. Like, Norma is a great fighter, and Chandler just bit off more than she could chew. And this fight, though, at 135, right?
Yeah.
So that's another interesting factor. Chelsea is huge, gigantic. She's been fed corn her entire life, corn and whole milk.
Yeah, 35.
What do you got,
dude? Yeah.
Yeah, no, 35.
Yeah, exactly, 135. I think you guys have sold me fair enough. The bigger fighter, dog money. Can't trust Josie Nunez. Hasn't beaten anybody. Hasn't really looked impressive. So I'm in. Little dog shot never hurt anybody.
I honestly might sprinkle inside the distance as well on her, dude. I think she's gonna decimate her with ground and pound.
That's fine.
I like that.
Yeah,
and she could get a subby too. She's got some nasty stuff. All right, we got Jafel Pastor Filho. Thank you, Father. Versus O'Day.
It's El Pastor. He loves tacos.
That's pretty. God damn it, that's a good one, Guru. My God, that was good. Oh wow, finally he added something in the nickname department. I've been waiting. He caught me off guard there. Then we got the Jamaican sensation, O'Day Osborne. Choose Paca. We got Harry Osborne, right? No, just kidding. So Jafel the Pastor. I hope he said his hopes and prayers, because if this guy can put together a takedown, it could just be fight over for O'Day. He hasn't shown a real process anywhere. And a guy like Boom Boom with a signature submission was able to put it off real quick. And like Jafel, I mean, that guy's a legit grappler. So the other thing is he throws real firepower on the feet. And we've seen O'Day Osborne like go for jumping knees from 5 miles away and just get slept. So I don't trust this guy. And like that Charles Johnson fight, if he didn't get kicked in the balls and take the full 5 minutes in the apex, he was on the verge of gassing. And then like Charles Johnson just that was disappointing. But
he
then
stomped like, his way to victory.
That's it, man. Like O'Day calf kicks, that was the first time he used them in his career against Charles Johnson. I don't trust him to use any real semblance of game plan on a consistent basis. And anytime that like he's been tested against a finisher, he's cracked. So Jafel by subby, just not money line. You don't need money line.
I think one of the biggest things here for O'Day Osborne is that he's like used to being the bigger fighter, and the only thing he's got on Filho is reach. And we've already just kind of talked about like how he's taking flying knees from he literally threw a flying knee versus Tyson Nam that looked like when your like little brother or cousin has the controller and is learning the controls and throws the combination from a distance that makes no sense, and then you literally just rock them to sleep and the fight's over and they complain that, why are you beating me? It's unfair. The game's broken, that kind of shit. Like, it made no sense. So, and then on the other side, I've been so happy because I bet Charles Johnson versus him, and I'm like, oh my God, this is the sketchiest fight ever, and was very happy to win. And we cashed out big time with a Sue round 2 submission. Hit that dart throw exactly on O'Day Osborne. I like TB said, I like Filho by submission. He's got 10 career submissions, and he gets them all the time. He's got 7 in round 1. And finish wise, he has 7 round 1 finishes, 3 round 2 finishes, and 4 round 3 finishes, 6 rear naked chokes. In general, he's just a finisher. He's got decent cardio. I think this is Ode's a problem for Ode, and I was saying to TB as well. I think that there's a reason why on Dana White can coming off of, you know, I mean, he's got one fight in the UFC, right? Two fights actually versus Makhachev. So I think they know exactly where Fajalio is in his career. So they want to see how he stacks up against a guy like Ode, and it makes a lot of sense to me here. So I was looking at a dog shop, could not get there at all, because I'm used to Ode being a favorite and fading him, but didn't get that chance here. So I'm gonna take the favorite. I like the submission. Rob, you on the same feeling the same way?
Yeah, I like Fiolo in this spot. I actually bet Byrez his last time out, and I had Byrez by knockout, and that was just a fucking terrible beat. And credits to Fiolo, because he's tough as shit for eating that liver kick and bouncing back and taking him down and just arm triangling him right away. I don't think Ode's grappling is any good, but I think Ode's pretty good at range. I feel like that's where he can have success, and I feel like if he's going to obviously have success, it's just going to be early. I feel like if Fiolo can get him up against the fence, he can get him down and submit him. I feel like the under 2.5 and the fight doesn't go is like a pretty solid parlay piece. I'm probably going to get to it there. I want to see what Fiolo inside the distance is as well. But I feel like if Osborne wins the fight, it's going to be a knockout. I don't think it's going to be a decision. I don't think Fiolo's going to give him distance, especially if it gets into the later rounds. And I just don't think he can stay safe without getting taken down for a 15-minute fight and win a decision. So, yeah, I like the fight to end inside a distance, and I like Fiolo to win inside a distance as well.
Nice. I like that inside the distance for Fiolo instead of the money line. I think if it's going the distance, we're looking at something sketchy.
You know, interestingly enough, Fiolo's two finished losses are both by submission, and you never would have guessed it, but Ode Osborne has 5 submission wins. So how funny would that be? But I don't see it.
All right, we got Thiago the Red Sea Moses versus Mitch the Brick Ramirez. Short notice matchup. Mitchie the Brick coming in, replacing who was it? Who's he filling in for, Guru?
Or Brad Prophet? Riddell.
Brad Riddell. So, who do you think's a tougher matchup, Brad Riddell or the Brick? Mitch Ramirez here.
The Brick for sure.
Yeah.
No, listen. I mean, For the Brick here, I feel like if you like the underdog shot, if you really think that Moises is washed, then you take Mitch Ramirez by round one finish, because he's got five round one finishes in his career. That being said, you look at Moises, he lost to who? Benoit Saint-Denis, Joel Alvarez, and Islam Makhachev, right? I think the worst of those being Joel Alvarez, but Joel Alvarez is fucking huge, and he just beats the shit out of him against the cage. Benoit Saint-Denis, unbelievable. Most people had him thinking that he's going to beat Dustin Poirier. And Islam Makhachev, your current lightweight champion, takes till round 4 to submit him. I just think unless Mitch cracks him early and finishes the fight, it's just too much too soon, and Mitch was just happy to get to the UFC. But, you know, he did face Prathas up a weight class. You know, I think he belongs at lightweight, so this is certainly interesting for him, and it's an interesting caveat, especially at the line. But, like I said, I think a little too much too soon. So give me Thiago Moises. I even like Moises in the distance, maybe round 2 or 3. But, yeah, if you like Mitch round 1. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm going to go Thiago probably by submission, and round 2 is the most likely. He's going to weather the early storm. Ramirez might land a takedown. Moises probably scrambles back, maybe lands his own takedowns, starts putting it on him at the end of round 1. And if we can just hang on to round 2, then that's where Moises goes ahead. Probably takes the bag as it gets going and finishes the job. Mitch, like the Guru so aptly said, you know, all his potential comes from going for the early finish here. And he's very much like he's going to be the bigger guy. So there is some interest in like bigger guys that are willing to come forward and kind of go crazy on Thiago, have had a little bit of success. Joel Alvarez, Benoit. But is Mitchie quite that level? I'm not sure, But listen, I'm sure the price is going to be good enough to at least take a chance on it. So prop wise, you've got to go Mitchy round one and then take Tiago like round two on top of it. Or you could just pass on the fight because they have it priced correctly. So take your choice. My pick is I'm parting the Red Sea here. I'm taking Moses. What do you got, MMA? Prop-a-hug.
Yeah. I mean, I bet Moises by sub at plus 135 earlier for 1.25 units. I just like for Ramirez here, I feel like he's just going to have to land leg kicks. He actually does have pretty good leg kicks. That's where he does his best work. I don't think Moises is going to play with fire on the feet. I think he's just going to take him down. I think he's going to get his back. And I think it's going to be one of his more easier wins. I just feel like it's just not a good fight for Ramirez. I know he's coming down to 55, but to make your debut against Moises, I feel like is a pretty tough task, especially on a BJJ aspect as well for Ramirez. So, yeah, give me the Moises submission at plus 135. I don't think he's going to fuck around with this guy on the feet. I know people are thinking the KO. Like, is it live? Yes, because Moises has power, but I just feel like after he eats a couple leg kicks, then he's going to grapple him, get him up against the fence, and he could potentially take his back up against the fence, up against the fence as well, like he did against Yago. So, yeah, give me the sub.
I like it. I like it. Here we go. We got Josh Kuya Koulibaly versus Danny El Puma Silva. I mean, you want to talk about a potential firefight? This has fight of the night written all over it. And if not, it's someone getting a performance bonus in my mind. Because, I mean, Danny Silva is going to bring the fight, and it's all about what Josh Koulibaly does to respond to it. And guess what? We got a small cage. I mean, I think we get a war. Silva, I know he's known as a boxer. That dude lands some crushing calf kicks as well. He mixes it up to the body, can change levels mid-combo. I really appreciate what this guy does as a striker. And I've never seen Josh Koulibaly land 200 strikes in a fight. So my thought here is Danny Silva, he should be able to put a pace on and land the volume, land with power. But, I mean, we have seen him give up his back. We have seen him, you know, get his back taken standing in round one. But I've also seen him get out of these positions. And I think he's athletic enough. He has scrambles, and he gives up his back as a means to avoid the ultimate takedown. And I think Koulibaly, while he's opportunistic, he isn't quite the finisher that he needs to be to secure this victory. And I think Silva's just going to win cleanly on damage and volume and avoid the extended takedown positions that Koulibaly could threaten here. Minus 192 makes no sense to me. I know he's the established guy. He's got the more experience, but Silva here, I mean, he's a taller guy. He's given up a little bit of reach, but I think he's going to make up for it with some of the speed advantage.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where it's predicated. I just feel like, you know, while Koulibaly likes to be in violent fights, he's not necessarily a finisher or a violent guy. Five KOs, five decisions. Danny Silva is not the same animal. Like, I just feel like he throws with much harder intention. And the thing with Koulibaly is, you know, I was thinking maybe he's low output. It's really just more that he's a counter striker. So Danny Silva is going to give him a firefight. It's going to absolutely be a banger. So I think an under 2.5 at plus 160 is actually an interesting thought as well. But I do like Danny Silva here. I think, like TB said, I think he's the younger guy. And I was just really impressed with his general output versus Angel Pacheco. And I just don't necessarily feel like Josh Koulibaly's output will still be there, even though I have felt like I learned that he's not necessarily low output, but he still doesn't have a forward pressing game like that. One of the fights that really sticks out in my mind is the Melsik Bogdasarian fight. He's losing the entire fight, and he fucking snatches the neck out of nowhere. Melsik sneezes, makes a horrible mistake, and I mean he pulls it out in front of his hometown crowd. Australia, Melsik, afraid of flying, flies 7,000 miles across the world. Horrible, horrible spot for Melsik. Sungwoo Choi fight, he drops Sungwoo Choi like 2-3 times. Can't put him away, can't finish him, doesn't have the fight IQ. It's a split decision. It's not great, you know. He's a bit of an underperformer. been knocked out by this was the key. Ready? This was the little icing on the cake after we played Danny Silva plus 160. Who knocked out Josh Koulibaly? Jalen Turner. Who's Danny Silva training with? Jalen Turner. Love that. Love when that happens. So give me Danny Silva, dog shot. Koulibaly, to me, needs a finish to cover his line, and I don't think he gets one. What do you think, Rob?
I'm actually picking Koulibaly to knock out Danny Silva. I think Danny Silva is going to disrespect Koulibaly striking. I think he's going to get caught and get knocked out. In the Contender Series fight, and when I see in Silva's tape, I think he's always open to the left hook counter all the time. I think he drops his hands after he extends on his combinations. When we watch Koulibaly drop people and have his most success, it's off his counter striking. Even in his debut against Jourdain, he was actually having some pretty good success in the clinch up against the fence and throwing elbows up there against up against the fence as well. He looked good against Choi, as you said, Gru. He dropped him two times. He couldn't finish him, but I mean, Choi showed a lot of durability, I think. I don't think Danny Silva's like been tested with that durability. I think Pacheco is kind of dog shit as well. I really don't think he's good. I don't think he's on Koulibaly's level at all. And I think Danny Silva's going to try to fight very comfortable in the pocket as he does all the time. I think he could potentially get taken down, but I don't think Koulibaly's going to go there. But if he does, he's going to probably back up himself being a minus 192 to minus 200 favorite. But I feel like the KO is just the best path for Koulibaly. I feel like Danny Silva's going to put himself in a lot of spots and put himself into a lot of danger. And I feel like for Danny Silva to win this fight, he's just going to have to make it dirty. And when he makes it dirty against a guy who has the speed and has the power like Koulibaly, and he just keeps getting better and better each fight progressing, and I feel like now he's just taking a downgrade. Like in the Bogdasarian fight, Bogdasarian's a kickboxer. He's a very good kickboxer. And he was beating him with his hands, but Bogdasarian's a way better fucking striker than Danny Silva in my mind. So I just feel like here this is a step down for him. And rewatch the Murphy fight. He hurt Murphy bad, where he had Murphy fall down to a knee and Murphy had to clinch him and grapple him. Murphy respected Koulibaly striking and had to grapple and wrestle him. So I feel like Danny Silva's just going to disrespect the striking. And I think he's going to get knocked out here. So once I get a good line on Koulibaly by KO, I'm going to take the KO on him.
That's fair. I think his win value would come from the finish. I think Silva would win a decision if it goes that far. And I think that he has his own finishing potential, but Koulibaly is pretty durable. I mean, Turner finished him up a weight class on short notice, and he turned his ankle really badly and just couldn't run around anymore. So I don't think that necessarily happens here. But, yeah, I mean, he has to make a pretty far trip as well. I mean, he's coming from the same camp with Tuivasa and all them. So he is traveling a bit. They did get there a decent amount early, but that is a factor to be spoken about. I'm going to keep with the dog shot here, but I respect it. I do see that there is a potential for Koulibaly's counter-striking to have that. And if you're taking the dog shot, I'm sure you can find a little sprinkle on a good prop for Koulibaly if you need a little protection. I like that. Or you could just be on prop side and just say, fuck you, TB. That also is a possibility. You're allowed to do what you want on this channel. So we got J-Lo. It's Jacqueline Amarim. She's still Jenny from the block, or Jackie from the block, I should say. And then we got Corey McKenna Poppins. This one should be an interesting fight. I think Amarim, her striking is good offensively, very poor defense, but because of her reach and ability to change levels and get to takedowns, her defense doesn't get exposed against everybody. But in Sam Hughes' fight, after she decided, well, you know, it didn't go well round one, it's about it. I mean, Sam Hughes actually lands some legit combos on her before Amarim decides she's done with that fight in round two. So Sam Hughes did have a little bit of a factor to play in the absolute quitting of Jacqueline Amarim. And I got to say, Sam Hughes is a lot bigger and has a lot better cardio. Like, she's known for her cardio. McKenna's like, well, she's solid. She can fight the decision. She's done it before. I don't think she builds as the fight goes. I wouldn't quite say that. You know what I mean? So I think there was a couple factors that played in Sam Page's favor in that fight. And also, I mean, the debut, right? Like, getting over the nerves. And also, like, you have this girl dead to rights, completely locked in choke. One, I mean, Sam Hughes got that turkey neck, bro. Like, that was, like, she's got a skinny-ass neck, for one. So it's hard to lock in the rear naked choke. And then when you lock it in and you're getting your glove absolutely grabbed, when you're getting, like, fouled like crazy. The ref is yelling at you, but not actually doing anything about it or taking points. So Amarim gets as close as possible to submission. And I'm watching the McKenna versus Kay Hansen fight. And let me tell you something, like Kay Hansen's a much worse wrestler and grappler than Jacqueline Amarim. And she's a worse athlete, but she's taking McKenna's back and getting into the RNC positions. I think Jacqueline Amarim has a good, a really solid chance to dominate round one and potentially finish. And I think her cardio issues, it could be an issue, but it could be a little overstated. I'm just saying, like, we've seen people kind of pull a stunt in their debut. Tyler Santos versus what? Who did she lose to? Like, that was one of the most embarrassing losses.
Barella.
You know exactly. Yeah, Mara Romero Barella. And, you know, sometimes in your debut, when you get so close to finishing, you're squeezing on the choke and it doesn't happen. Like, that's it. Now, in the fight, in her next fight against against Montserrat Ruiz, we see Amarim have a very successful round one, nearly pull off multiple submission attempts. Round two, she lands this crazy head kick, but gets taken down off it, and then just immediately finds a beautiful sweep to get to top control. McKenna's not, she's like strong. She's been filling out athletically, but Amarim, yeah. I think, you know, she's going to be the much better grappler here, and the way she flows through different positions and submissions, I don't understand the line movement. I don't want to play this fight. I really didn't want to when Amarim was the favorite, but now I'm getting to the point where, like, I have to kind of consider things here because she is my pick.
I'm just really not convinced on the cardio aspect. I'm not sure how serious she takes the MMA game. I get it. You know, she's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitor that obviously transitioned here. You know, she's not facing any resistance in the Montserrat Ruiz fight. So, okay, she gets the ground and pound in round three. But versus Corey McKenna, if she does expect to win, she's going to face some resistance. So I do expect that to wear on her cardio. I think if you like Jacqueline Amarim, I think you take her round one, maybe even round two, but round one, round two submission. But otherwise I do. I like Corey McKenna to kind of pull away. I think she's somebody that's kind of grown into her frame. Like, I don't know when you got that picture from. That picture is really funny of Corey. Like, Corey's like kind of grown up in her own respect. Like, she does not look like the 20-year-old. Listen, you saw her doing commentary with Bain, and you're like, whoa, that's Corey McKenna? Like, okay.
UFC picture. They still have that one.
It's a glow. It's a glow. You know what I'm saying? She had a glow up, so I respect that. Yeah, that's an old picture. But she doesn't look how she looked versus Kay Hansen. And from 20 to 24 years old, you'd have to imagine she's making major, major improvements in her game. And you've kind of seen that from fight to fight from her. She's gotten better and better. So this is a good test. I got Pick'em, and as the line's gotten a little bit wider, I'm obviously a little bit happier with that. But to say that I'm convinced or confident would be a long shot. What do you think, Prop?
Yeah, I mean, I took the Amarim sub at opening on BetOnline at a +265 for 0.75 units. I mean, exactly what you guys talked about is the Kay Hansen fight. I mean, it's just brutal. I mean, literally, McKenna's just like dragging her hands on the ground, and she's going to get up, and she just gives up her neck right away. If she does that to Amarim, Amarim's going to submit her right away. I think Amarim's top game is going to be strong for McKenna as well. I think she's going to be able to get her down and set up ground and pound. I don't think McKenna's faced any good grapplers in her last three fights, and she was even put in a bad spot last fight as well, where she actually almost got her back taken in the third round as well. Or it was the late second round where she almost got her back taken. Yes. So I feel like there's going to be spots where Amarim's going to get her up against the fence. I think she can get her down. I think she can submit her early. But if once it gets later into the fight, maybe McKenna could take over. That's why I didn't kind of want to go with the money line, just because I think McKenna can win the third round at a pretty high clip. But I just don't think she's going to be as physical as people think she's going to be in the clinch. And I feel like that's where Amarim's jiu-jitsu and it's just going to be over McKenna's strength. So, yeah, give me Amarim by submission. I like Amarim by sub here. That's a bet I have as well.
Amen. Amen, brother. I'm with you.
And I was going to say, I agree with you, Prop, completely. And And that if you're playing Amareem, you don't play the money line. You play the sub prop because I do think she's finish dependent.
I want to see sub one as well. The one that opens on FanDuel.
And also, if you're on the McKenna side, like better live. She's losing round one.
Exactly. Probably. Yeah. Like the C-Rod and Dolgarian fight. Dolgarian gets tired somehow.
Exactly. Harder. Like, listen, there's that's why, like, you know, you gotta check out the events live too. There's plenty of opportunities to get in there with a good live bet. Even when there's large favorites and they lose round one, but you know that they're builders, you know, you get in on them at a juicier price. Yeah. So make sure you're paying attention to those live lines, people, because there's plenty of opportunities. We got it. Here's our curtain jerker. The first fight of the night for the UFC, the last fight of the night for Chronic Boys and Propaholic. We got Haralampos Gregoriou, Ferocious, versus Chad the Monster and Helliger. Now, there's another Canadian, I think, that's bigger than you, Chad, that also has that nickname. So if you lose this fight, you probably have to give that nickname back to Kyle the Monster Nelson. Make sure you check out his interview with us on the channel. Haralampos Gregoriou, I think he's the younger guy, that's clear. He's taller, 1 inch. He's got a 3-inch reach advantage. I think he's got a power advantage. I think he's got a speed advantage. I think he might not have, like, I don't know about the grappling aspect. I'm just not sure, okay? But at the same time, there is a guy that trains with Ray Longo, has, you know, shown us some good scrambles and some stuff on the regional scene versus the guy that has, like, 6 losses by submission. Is it 6? Is it 4? Is it 6? Whatever it is, Chad just loves losing by submission. Haralampos, I think he's going to be able to land the big strikes on the feet, and I think Chad can look decent until the first big strike lands, like the Arichi Long fight. Like, might look competitive for a short while. First big shot lands, you start seeing the blood streak down. You start seeing the look in his eyes change, and then he starts getting wrestled a little bit. And Chad just is, I have a feeling this guy's just going to fade. And, you know, bye-bye, good attempt in the UFC. But the only guy you beat was Jesse Strader, and that guy started putting it on you.
Horrible.
I mean, come on.
That's the fight. That's really the fight that kind of sells me here. His claim to fame here, his best win is against Jesse Strader. He loses round one versus Jesse Strader. Jesse Strader is exhausted. Jesse Strader is a boxer. Jesse Strader is wrestling you, grappling you, taking you down, holding you down. Haralampos Gregoriou. Gregoriou is actually, not only is he like a flashy striker and a technical striker, but he's got really good takedowns. Like, he's got really good takedown timing. He mixes it up well, and he's got good top control. So I just see that being a problem for Chad and Helliger. I think Chad is decent at like the offensive parts of MMA, but really bad at the defensive parts. I think where he thrives the most is like in the clinch or the dirty boxing or, you know, off the break. And Gregoriou is just as good there, if not better. So I just don't really see it. I got in at minus 155 on Gregoriou, and I'm content with that. What do you think, Prop?
Yeah, I like Gregoriou here. I mean, I feel like he can mix in the wrestling against Chad. I just think Chad's honestly pretty bad, man. Like, I just, like, he leaves his hands down low. He tries to, like, just land the big power shot. He tries to land it off the jab, land the 1-2, big counter two right hands. Losing to Jesse Strader, losing 2 rounds to him isn't a good look. I mean, he literally won because he just ended up knocking him out because Jesse Strader gassed. I'm not going to lie, though. Like, I think Chad's actually has a pretty good chin on him. I think he actually, I don't think he has a good chin, but I think he has pretty good recovery. He showed it in the Alatang fight where he was getting hit really bad in the first round. He ate really big shots and he was just able to survive. I don't think Gregoriou has like really great finishing intentions. I know when I was watching Cameron Smotherman's tape, he didn't really have a good chin as well, and he would always get dropped in his fights. So I feel like this fight can potentially go over. I was thinking about an over 1.5 as a parlay piece, maybe like a fight starts round 2. I just feel like maybe even a fight to ends, maybe fight ends round 3. I feel like it just can end late. I don't think it's going to end early, but I feel like there's potentially for this fight ending late. But a prop I'm also going to be looking for is fight to end by sub. Like, I feel like it's a little bit interesting just because I think the guillotine for Chad can be there as well. Like, when I'm watching Gregoriou in his 5-round fight, he's putting his neck in pretty bad spots. He's still learning how to grapple and wrestle as well. Obviously, I know he's with Marab and Sterling, but he can make a mistake and Chad can catch him off balance. But Chad being 37, you know, not only beating Jesse Strader at the UFC level, I don't really see him having a high upright winning this fight. So, yeah, I'm picking Gregorio to win, but I like Gregorio to win, Bob. Maybe round three decision, but yeah, this fight's maybe a pass for me unless I get a read later in the week on this fight.
Well, this fight actually was a pass for me at -180 something, and it became a play at -155.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that, and then I actually 100% agree with prop again. I even wrote in my notes here, I wrote fight goes the distance as a play for this fight. I 100% think that it does go the distance.
And Chad's never been knocked out either. So.
Exactly. So I love the fact that it's over 2.5 -115, which means fight going the distance is going to be plus money. So give it to me.
God damn. All right. Well, hey, a great breakdown on this fight. Had a really fun time breaking it all down tonight. Please, if you guys haven't done so already, it's messed up, but you can right your wrongs. Throw a like on the video. There's got to be more in you in the chat than have actually thrown a like. So it's not too late to do the right thing, but we appreciate you guys so much. Wouldn't be the same doing this show every week without you guys. I'm absolutely loving it. We're on a roll, baby. We'll be at UFC AC when that's coming up in a few weeks. Just enjoying the vibes and having a great time. Can't wait. I'm gonna pass it off to Prop, and then we'll let Guru close it out. So Prop, thank you so much for joining us. Guru, keep doing what you do. Prop, what do you got to say for the people before we let the Guru close it out?
Yeah, thank you, TB, and thank you, Guru, for having me on the show. I appreciate it, guys. And yeah, let's make some money this weekend, guys. You guys can find me on Twitter or X at MMA_propaholic. I have my Discord linked in my profile as well, where I first drop all my bets and then post them on my Twitter and give my breakdowns in there as well. We beat early line movement in there as well, and I'm actually taping UFC Vegas 89, and then I'll be on to Atlantic City following next week. So yeah, let's make some money this week. I'll be dropping more bets on my Twitter in the next following couple of days. So have your alerts on. And yeah, thank you everyone for tuning in. And let's make some money this weekend.
Love it. Love it. Prop, again, thanks so much for coming on, man. Really, really appreciate you. Hope to run into you live fights. Maybe if you can make it to AC. If not, hopefully, right? 301 or 302. I hear they're doing Prudential Center in June. So that should be super duper exciting. Yeah, man. Listen, guys, thank you so much for being here. Make sure you're following all of us. Make sure you're following my amazing co-host, TB Scouting MMA. You can follow him on X, Instagram, Pickett, Verdict, Tapology, and Bet MMA. You can follow me, the Guru, Guru Scouting MMA, on those same platforms, X, Instagram, Pickett, Verdict, Tapology, and Bet MMA. We post live on there on all of those platforms every single week. Make sure you tune in with us next Wednesday. We go live to break down UFC Vegas 89. We've got Amanda Ribas taking on Rose Namajunas. So that's sure to be a banger. So make sure you tune in for that one. And listen, guys, everybody, be safe out there. Let's make this money. Take care.